Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ACTUS podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and ACTUS. I'm Linnea Archibald, the Associate Editorial Director for ACTUS, and I will be your host for today's show. Today's topic is focused on developing an appealability score, and my guest today is Kathy Schumpert, MSN, RN, CCDS. Kathy is a seasoned healthcare leader with nearly 3 decades of nursing experience and a master's degree in nursing with a focus in administration. She has held leadership roles including director of nursing, chief quality officer, compliance officer, and risk manager. Currently serving as the senior manager of government audit and appeals at Stanford Healthcare, Kathy leverages her deep expertise in compliance, revenue cycle, and RAC denials to build efficient, accountable processes that protect hospital revenue. Known for her clear communication, fairness, and collaborative approach, she is passionate about improving outcomes, mentoring teams, and driving operational excellence across the continuum of care. Before we get started, a brief disclaimer that the views and opinions expressed in today's episode are solely those of Kathy Schumpert and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Stanford Healthcare. Also, a quick reminder that the ACTUS podcast offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO. We'll share the instructions at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. But now, before we jump into our conversation, a brief word about today's sponsor.
CDI professionals need a day-to-day reference when conducting their medical record reviews. One that can provide trusted clinical indicators for compliant and effective physician queries and easy-to-use reference tables. The 2026 ACTUS Pocket Guide is your essential CDI resource. It includes updates to clinical diagnostic standards, official guidelines for coding and reporting, ICD-10 CM codes, and CDI critical thinking tips. The 2026 ACTUS Pocket Guide is co-written by industry veteran Lori Prescott and Dr. James Manns, a practicing physician at the Mayo Clinic, steeped in the latest physician documentation terminology. Pre-order your 2026 edition today and be one of the first to receive the number one CDI resource when it's released this November.
Thanks again for joining me today, Kathy. I'm really excited to have you here with me today, and I'd love to start just by getting you to share a little bit of background. So why did you feel that you needed this appealability score? What was the state of your kind of denials management program before you started developing this tool?
Hi, Linnea. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. I'm very excited to share my background, the development of the appealability scoring tool, and hopefully people can walk away with some interest in this tool and how it can help them with their practice. I felt like I needed the appealability scoring tool based on collaborations with other departments and within my own department regarding appeals. And I think anybody that has worked appeals for any length of time will agree that there's variance. So when I would collaborate with the CDI department, coding teams, healthcare providers, other departments, I often observed significant variability in the perception regarding what constitutes a favorable appeal decision. Some individuals would raise concerns about whether the argument was the appropriate argument that we utilized. I think we've all encountered some skepticism in various forms. So to address this, I aim to establish a formal review process that would validate our efforts and minimize subjectivity in our evaluations. While questions about our process may still arise, we now have an objective tool to support our decisions and to counter those subjective opinions. Furthermore, I recognize the necessity of implementing a volume mitigation strategy to address potential increases in denials or reductions in staffing. Additionally, I required a systematic approach to identifying which cases needed to be escalated to the contracting team. My goal was to ensure that I was not overlooking any critical issues or spending time on reviews that would not yield meaningful results.
Awesome. So with that little bit of background out of the way, once you decided that this is a scoring tool that we are going to develop, where did you start? What kind of served as the basis for the scoring tool, and what considerations did you have to take into account when developing it?
So the scoring tool is built upon a foundation of official guidelines, industry standards, hospital-specific criterion, and insights derived from trends in denials and appeals. That's where we started. I did have to take into account that others may have questions as we're developing this tool, and to determine how to address in the appealability scoring tool. So if somebody were to come back and say that, well, coding guidelines do not specify that this has to be documented in this type of way, I can say the insights that we've had in our trends for denials and appeals tells us differently. So it helped to set a foundation where people understood where this tool was coming from. We're not saying that we have to have every single piece for an appeal. We're saying that if it isn't documented in this format, the likelihood that it will be overturned is poor.
Yeah, I think having that objectivity is really valuable, and probably saves time for the professionals who are reviewing these denials and considering what to appeal, I would imagine. So can you walk us through kind of the actual scoring system? What criteria goes into a case receiving, let's say, a higher or a lower score? Is the process kind of manual for your team, or do you have some of that automated in your whatever systems you're using?
We're working on automating the tool now. Currently, it is a manual process. So I can give you the criterion that I've used in the past for the higher and lower scores. And I can give you a couple examples as well. So higher scores are awarded to diagnoses that align with specific guidelines, adhere to standard clinical criterion, feature a clearly articulated treatment plan that is original rather than copy and pasted, and demonstrates consistent documentation. So not every diagnosis has a chapter-specific guideline, but when there is, we know that that gives our argument greater strength in our appeal. If we have a diagnosis that doesn't have a lot of variance in clinical criterion used, that also is added strength to the appeal. We know that copy and paste is problematic because when it's copied forward, and we don't see progression where we've addressed test results or where the treatment plan has been updated, that's problematic. And then if a diagnosis is listed, let's say in the history and physical, and it's not brought forward through the remainder of the medical record, that's a weakness. So as far as an example, I would say, we have, If I use acute blood loss anemia, when we look at documentation, we know that we're looking for a drop in the hemoglobin, and we can set standards for that. That's pretty fair. So we know that that's met, that's pretty strong. If we're looking at treatment, many payers are going to look for blood transfusions, but we know that you don't have to have a blood transfusion. You can have other things that are occurring. As we're looking for the documentation consistencies, I might go in and look at physical therapy notes. If this is an orthopedic surgical patient, I may look at physical therapy notes and find that the patient was too lightheaded to complete physical therapy. So I know that this acute blood loss anemia has now impacted the treatment plan. So all of those things I take into account, that's going to yield a much higher likelihood that denial will be overturned. Low scores are assigned to diagnoses that lack chapter-specific guidelines. There's variability in clinical criteria, inconsistent documentation, or there's no treatment plan. So, if you have prompts in a medical record that might aid in obtaining a diagnosis and there's no a treatment plan attached to it, we know that that's a lower likelihood of appeal success. Doesn't mean that we can't appeal it. It's just that if I have to search for that treatment plan and I need to argue it and it's not documented, it's a lower likelihood that we will have an appeal success. So a diagnosis that is added by some type of prompt in the medical record without a specific treatment plan associated with it, let's say sepsis. So we have sepsis. We do have specific chapter guidelines, but there is variability in the clinical criterion. If it's documented only in that documentation prompt and a lack of a treatment plan, I know that that's going to be a lower likelihood of appeal success.
Yeah, thank you for those examples. I think it's hearing it in context is really helpful. And I imagine listeners are going to find that helpful as well. Looking kind of beyond the tool itself, what did the implementation process look like once you had this scoring tool built? And what stakeholders did you need to involve in rolling it out? Was this a fairly interdepartmental collaboration situation, or was it mainly owned by your department?
So the implementation process involved quite a bit of education. And in the tool, you know, when we rolled it out, I will say I thought I was very clear about how to score the tool. However, when there were people that were completing reviews in practice, there were some questions. We ended up updating and adding more criterion to each area. So we may have started with, I think we started with four questions maybe. As far as maybe, I think it was with clinical validation. So we had consistent documentation, documented clinical signs and symptoms, documented evaluation of the clinical condition. And we also had included, if the diagnosis was included or introduced by a query, that the query was compliant with the most recent practice brief. So we ended up with more than four options in our scoring. And that was confusing at first for people because they said, well, five are met. Well, that's great if five are met. We know that if we have four met, we have a high likelihood of appeal success. So you can have multiple standards that you use to screen with. It's just that we know if there's four, we have a high likelihood of appeal success. So rolling that out, I had to do in-depth education. I had thought when I had rolled it out that it was pretty clear, but I had to go back and do that review multiple times with folks so that they understood, because it was confusing. And then I had them also help as we reworded the tool so that it was what I had thought was understandable wasn't as understandable as I had anticipated. So we worked on that collaboratively together. The other thing, as far as stakeholders, of course, I involved coding and I involved CDI. And I also, you know, worked with the appeal writers that I had. And we looked at all of the things because I have my criterion established for clinical validation, and then I also have one for coding. I have one for inpatient coding. I have one for outpatient coding. So we did involve those individuals in creating this tool. As far as the involvement, in some areas, I had to do more of the review of what was important for their area. So if I was talking to revenue cycle about it, I'm not going to go over every single bit of the criteria, but I will go over how it helps me to establish KPIs, how it will help with getting more appeals out the door more quickly, where we are focusing, where we can anticipate we're going to have favorable determinations. So it just depended on what that level the stakeholder was at as far as what I included them in.
Yeah, that's great. And it's interesting. I feel like that step where you roll something out and find out that it wasn't quite as clear as you hoped it would be is like a necessary step with any new process. Like anytime I've developed a process, you need that feedback loop to then point out where maybe your logic wasn't quite as clear as you hoped it would be. So obviously with any new tool or system, you do want to make sure that your efforts are actually paying off. So what metrics do you monitor to see whether the tool is working well? And how did you determine that those were kind of the data points to watch?
As I establish metrics to monitor, I looked at things from a wide perspective. I wanted to look at appeals that possibly needed to be reviewed for quality. I wanted to establish which appeals I look at to determine whether we needed to update appeal templates. And I needed to look at which cases I would need to forward on to contracting for negotiations. Instead of randomly selecting cases for review, the tool allows for a targeted analysis of appeals based on their scores. This ensures that the most relevant and potentially problematic cases are prioritized for quality assurance. By analyzing the appeals based on their scores, we can identify trends and patterns that may not be apparent in random audits. For example, if multiple high-scoring appeals are consistently denied, this could indicate an issue that needs to be addressed. So I would know at that point to review those to determine, does the appeal writer need some additional training? Is there a quality issue? Or is this something I need to forward over to contracting? It facilitates a deeper understanding of why certain appeals succeed or fail and allows for a more effective root cause analysis. This can lead to actionable insights that improve the overall appeals process. And so that's that quality background that I have where I'm looking to improve processes and obtain stratified samples for reviews. Rather than spreading resources thinly across a wide range of cases, the tool allows my team to concentrate efforts on high prioritized appeals that are more likely to yield positive outcomes. The targeted approach enhances efficiency and effectiveness. By focusing on the specific areas identified through the scoring system, the organization can implement strategic improvements that have a greater impact across the appeals process. If we have something that's scored on the lower end, we may still appeal it, but we're not going to spend a great deal of time in those appeals. We know that our focus needs to be on those that are higher weighted. This also helps to minimize personal bias. So these random audits can sometimes be influenced by personal biases or subjective interpretations of what constitutes a good appeal. And so that's where we go back to where, when discussing appeals in a meeting with other entities, they may think something can be overturned and they're not working the appeal. So we're using this tool to mitigate that risk by relying on standardized criterion and ensuring that all appeals are evaluated fairly and consistently. The objective nature of the scoring system enhances accountability among team members as performance can be measured against clear, quantifiable standards rather than objective assessments. Additionally, we are able to identify trends that need to be sent on for contract negotiations. So there could be a systemic issue with the payer's review process or the criterion that they use. It provides a clear signal to the contracting team that there may need to revisit the terms of the contract or criterion used. The objective data from the scoring tool can be used to support discussions with payers, highlighting specific cases where a denial was unjustified despite meeting established criterion. So this helps me to determine, you know, if I receive a call and they need me to put something together as far as what they need to discuss with Aetna, I can do that very easily. It also helps them as they're trying to leverage information on these denials during contract negotiations. So by presenting evidence of unjust denials, we can advocate for more favorable terms, such as clearer guidelines for documentation or improved reimbursement rates. Engaging the payers about these denials can help establish accountability on their part. If certain criteria are consistently leading to denials despite meeting all criteria, it may prompt payers to reassess the review process.
Awesome. So on the topic of kind of the data piece and how you're monitoring success here, what results have you seen? And if something in the data is showing that there's maybe some room for improvement, what steps would you take to address that?
I've seen cases where we thought we would have something overturned, and going in to review it, I found that things were missing in the appeal. It gave us an opportunity then at the second level of appeal to provide a better argument. And that discussion, I think, was helpful with the appeal writer. So there's opportunities that we can use in real time that we're not missing an opportunity. If it's denied at level one, that we can take it on to level two and have a better argument. It may be that we decide if something is not overturned at level one, maybe somebody else takes a stab at it. If we think it was scored at a four, maybe we have somebody else look at it. I would say, as far as room for improvement, the one thing that I found, I had to consistently monitor that the appealability scoring tool was being used and documented. So this is where automation, I think, will be helpful with that. But I had to go back oftentimes, because it was a new process, to make sure that people were scoring it. We have used it in different ways. So we, you know, if we had times where we had decreased staffing, we may decide that maybe for a while we don't review those that are score two. Or maybe we decide if it's sepsis and the score is a two, we don't do those. There's variance in how we've used it. We haven't, you know, with denials, I would say that it's difficult to establish standards, because there's so much where when we get a medical record, it is what it is. There's not much we can do to improve that argument. It is what it is, but it helps to standardize and give us some data that we can report. It also helps us to figure out, you know, if I have something I'm going to appeal that's scored a two, I may decide that those cases, we're going to reach out to the provider on every single one of those, because it's a documentation. If it's a documentation issue, if it's a clinical validation issue, those may be the ones where we reach out to the providers, send them a copy of the appeal and say, we're having quite a bit of difficulty with this appeal. We're asking for your input. And so there's variance in how we've used it. As far as the data for room for improvement, it was really at the beginning when we developed the tool. I feel like I probably should have involved some individuals earlier on in the team to help make sure that when it was rolled out, that it was very clear for everyone. Once we've had it established, what we've had as far as room for improvement, we started to operationalize it in other areas. So we went beyond just our inpatient DRGs to outpatient, where we're looking at LCDs and NCDs. So it's helped us in those areas. There's also opportunity where you can use it for your short stays, setting criterion for that, where you feel like it's going to be helpful to determine which will and will not be overturned.
Awesome. It sounds like a good thing going you've got there. As we wrap up our conversation here, if someone listening wants to develop a similar tool, where would you recommend that they start? And what do you wish maybe you'd known before you embarked on this process?
I would recommend that they start writing rules. What rules do they want to establish for their appeals? And, their standard criterion, of course, like the official guidelines for coding and reporting. We have the coding clinic. I would start there and then work my way out as far as, do you have hospital-based criterion that you use that you want to incorporate, that if that's met, you're going to use for your appeals? And then your scoring methodology. You could have different scoring methodology, and you may have different decisions on how you want to use it. So you need to define how you're going to use this tool. Are you going to use it to help you determine where to use your resources, or do you just have extra appeal writers that they can just appeal everything? Is that what you're going to use it for? Are you going to use it for determining which cases you need to do a quality review on? Are you going to use it for contracting? You need to think about what you want what the value of the tool is going to be for you, so that you can decide as you're doing the scoring how you define what your next steps are. As far as what I wish I had known before starting this process, I would say that when I started the tool, I didn't have it clearly defined as far as all of the areas that I was going to touch. I was using it specifically for resource utilization. And I think there were others I should have included when I first started the process. I think that would have helped in the beginning. And then knowing now what I didn't know then, setting those areas, realizing the magnitude of all areas that it could aid in. So I wouldn't have, probably revised it maybe 3 times. So had I known all of those things, I wouldn't have had to revise 3 times. And I think maybe, I don't have the issues where I'm running up against coding or CDI in the past, years ago, different facility. Maybe involving those people from the get-go and just socializing it, letting people know that we're creating a tool. We're creating an objective tool so that they have an awareness of why you're doing it. Because when you approach people and say that you have an appealability scoring tool, they're not understanding necessarily why. So I think, after the third revision, we actually at the beginning put a purpose for that tool at the very beginning, so that when I send it off to a department, if they have a question, it's right there for them to understand what the purpose of this tool is.
Well, that is a great place for us to end. So thank you so much, Kathy. This was a really helpful conversation, and I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it. Denials are always a hot topic, and anything to make the fighting of them a little bit smoother is a welcome tool. So thank you so much for chatting with me today. And unfortunately, we have run out of time. But as always, if our audience has any questions about this topic, you can email the whole ACTIS team at info@actis.org. Thanks so much, Kathy. Now it's time for the ACTUS Update, which is a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. First, I hope that you all had a wonderful CDI week last week and solved lots of documentation mysteries with us. I did want to point out that if you missed the free webinar that happened last Thursday, you can go back and listen to that recording anytime on our website, and you can still claim the 1.5 ACTUS CEUs until September 18th. 2026. So make sure to take advantage of that. That webinar provided a great insight into the 2025 CDI Week industry survey results. So definitely take a minute and go check that out if you have not already. If you did host any of your own celebrations last week, we would love to hear about them as well. So if you have photos or just stories to share, please feel free to send those to info@actus.org. Secondly, with the CDI Week celebration in the rearview mirror, we have now turned our attention fully to the November-December CDI Journal, which has a theme of quality and health equity. If you have an article that you would like to submit to that edition, you do still have a couple of weeks to do so until October 1st. To submit an article, just complete that form that I've linked in today's show notes by the October 1st deadline. If your article is published in the journal, you do receive CEUs at a rate of 0.5 CEU per 350 published words. So that's a great way to both share your expertise with the community and also earn some credits toward your recertification at the same time. In addition to the submission form, we will also link to our publication FAQs in the show notes today, which serve as a great guide for all of those who are interested in writing for an ACTUS publication. While I'm on the journal, I did want to remind our ACTUS members that you can still read the September-October edition of the journal if you missed it. It was published earlier this month. It is full of great tips and advice focused on CDI and the continuum of care. Plus, you can take the brief 10-question quiz that is associated with that edition and earn your one ACTUS CEU. My third update is that the 2025 CDI salary survey is now open for responses through October 24th. We often say that this survey is one of kind of our tentpole publications within ACTUS, and for really good reason. We've seen members leverage the data gleaned from the salary survey to argue for raises, of course, but also new titles, hiring new staff, new non-monetary benefits to improve their employee satisfaction, and a lot more. We also reference the survey ourselves on what feels like a weekly basis for the entire year. So we are really thankful for the data that it provides and your responses to the survey. This year's salary survey report will be published later this winter for ACTUS members, and all of your answers will remain anonymous. So we really appreciate your candid responses. And finally, my last update is that applications for the ACTUS CDI Scholarship Program are now open through November 23rd. As in years past, we are awarding scholarships of a one-year ACTUS membership and enrollment in the ACTUS CDI Apprenticeship Program, registration to an online CDI bootcamp of the recipient's choosing, registration to either the 2026 ACTUS Symposium Outpatient CDI or the Physician Advisor Forum, and registration to the 2026 ACTUS Conference. All of the applications will be reviewed by the Furthering Education Committee and ACTUS staff following that application deadline of November 23rd, and then decisions will be rendered early in 2026. And that is all I have for updates today, but as always, you can find the links to more information about everything I talked about today in the show notes. As a reminder, before we close out, each ACTUS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of posting. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTUS.org by clicking on the ACTUS podcast link under the Free Resources tab, and then clicking on today's episode from the list on that page. Then scroll down to the recording of today's episode and click play. At the end of the video, all the way at the end, when the timer gets to zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Simply click on that, take the brief survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting that evaluation. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there as well. And to ensure that your certificate reaches you and doesn't get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing that CEU evaluation form. The cutoff for today's episode CEU is Sunday, September 28th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you'll no longer be eligible to claim that 0.5 CEU for this week's episode, but don't worry, we will be back in just a couple of weeks. And with that, we have reached the end of today's ACTUS podcast episode. We will be back on Wednesday, October 8th with a new episode hosted by ACTUS Director Rebecca Hendren. If you would like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show anytime on the ACTUS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in your show notes. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you would take a minute and leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by Dion Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, please email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.